In this segment, we are going to examine the defeat this past week of House Majority Leader Eric Cantor in the Virginia Republican primary. Now, most call this a surprise, an unseen result, and even Cantor's internal polling had him ahead by a sizable margin going into the election. Those internal pollsters, those are the newest guys over in the unemployment line, by the way. The result wasn't of a surprise to my next guest, however, here to share why as a journalist with the Washington Examiner, Betsy Woodruff. Good morning, Betsy.
Hey there. How's it going?
I'm going to give you the opportunity on the count of three. One, two, three. You can say I told you so.
I kind of can't say that. It's a little weird, but I'm not complaining.
So what? This was going back now in, I mentioned you were with the Washington Examiner, but back on January 6th of this year for the National Review, you wrote a piece about Eric Cantor's challenger from the right, Professor Dave Brock, Court's big name conservative backers. What got your attention on this race and this candidate? Was it because superficially you look at it, and at that point in time with Dave Brock, you could have just put up the tag sacrificial lamb on his name?
Yeah, no kidding. And on its face, Brett's candidacy didn't look that different from any of the plethora of doomed Tea Party candidates who've taken on big-name Republicans. But what made me take Brett seriously was I talked to a source named Amanda Chase, who was the former political director for Eric Cantor when he was running in Virginia. And she told me to. She said, look, taking down Cantor is going to be incredibly difficult. He's a formidable fundraiser. He's obviously one of the most powerful figures in Virginia politics. But she added that if anyone was going to do it, it would be Brett. She said that Brett had best grassroots connections, had the ability to talk clearly and understandably about issues that are important to grassroots folks, and understood the district well enough that he was going to be the most formidable primary opponent that Cantor had probably ever had in his career. So I took her seriously, and the rest is history.
And when you look at the people that Brett surrounded himself with, again, by resume, by lack of name recognition, it's sort of like, who are these people? But he put together a winning team.
Yeah, no kidding. And as long as we're talking about the folks who are aligned with Brett, there's some interesting details in his resume that I think can be indicative of what his congressional career will look like. So everyone's calling Brett a Tea Party candidate. You know, people are talking about him like he's some far-right firebrand. But in fact, Brett entered Virginia politics by doing volunteer advisory on education policy for Walter Stosch. Now, Walter Stosch is a state senator. I hadn't heard of him until I started reporting on Brett. But an interesting thing about Stosch is that he faced his own primary challenger from the right back in 2007. And Stosch spent about $1 million winning his primary, which is an enormous sum for a Virginia state Senate seat. So the interesting thing here is that Cantor entered Virginia politics by working with a guy who found himself in a situation that's almost analogous, or Brett entered Virginia politics by being in a situation almost analogous to Eric Cantor's. And then Brett went on to advise Governor King on his Economic Board of Advisors. So while Brett is certainly conservative, and, you know, without a doubt, his right-wing credentials are unquestioned, he's also shown an ability to work with people across the aisle and to be helpful to guys who might not necessarily be ideologically simpatico with him.
I mean, we know certainly through the campaign that he is he has a different sense of priorities with immigration reform versus what Eric Cantor has done. And, you know, just to, you know, as devil's advocate, Cantor wasn't necessarily a promoter of amnesty, but it seems like the voters in Virginia 7 were more angry at Cantor for not doing anything to stop any movement toward amnesty.
I think that's right, yeah. Of all the members of House leadership, Cantor was probably the one that did the most to try to reach out to national Tea Party groups, you know, and position himself as a conservative activist-friendly member. But especially in the weeks before the primary, Cantor's tone on immigration, his suggestion that he'd be willing to work with the president on it, was a really big problem for activists in his district. And another thing that really hurt Cantor was that an organization called Young Guns Virginia, which was affiliated with the Young Guns network that Cantor founded, dedicated a lot of resources to going after conservative activist district chairs throughout the state. And it failed to take out any of them. But because Young Guns Virginia did that, the perception was that Cantor was working behind the scenes to take down conservative activists. And activists who might not have been totally ideologically riled up by Cantor's career in Congress saw that political move and said, all right, this guy on the surface might seem okay. This guy, you know, he's not Boehner. He's not maybe as centrist on immigration as others. But we think he's going after our guys, so it's open season.
Talking about Betsy Woodruff, journalist with the Washington Examiner, WashingtonExaminer.com on the web, about the defeat of House Majority Leader, soon-to-be former Majority Leader, now Eric Cantor, here on Issues and Ideas. Part of Cantor's role in his position was to travel around the country and show support, give speeches, help raise money for candidates in everywhere that the need was. And I parallel Cantor with what Chris Christie is doing right now, New Jersey governor through the Republican Governors Association. And if you're Chris Christie right now looking at 2016 and the presidential run, how much do you look at what Cantor had been doing and whether or not it disconnected him from his district, affected any measurable or visible or sensible result production? And if you're Chris Christie, do you say, maybe I should get my butt behind my desk instead of going out up to New Hampshire or Virginia or wherever and do more fundraising?
I think you certainly look at that. Now, Christie is in a slightly easier position because he just won re-election, so he won't have to stress about, you know, having someone pull a Dave Brat on him to the same way that Cantor was. But I think, I mean, look, Cantor's loss is absolutely a cautionary tale to any Republican incumbent who feels like he can sit back, relax, and not take the needs of his immediate local constituents seriously.
I was thinking mainly, too, with Christie because, yeah, obviously he can't run for re-election as governor again, but If his result production tails off in this second term because he's traveling around the country, I mean, we've already seen we have an issue with budget debts and taxes still being on a high, property taxes in particular. And if he doesn't do enough of a correction or fixing of those problems, that just gives Democratic presidential nominees, when he goes for 2016, even Republican nominees, say, well, he wants this higher job, but look how poor he did in the second term of his last job.
That's a good point. I hadn't thought about that, but yeah, absolutely. That could certainly be an issue for him if he decides to run for president.
Brad had a great line on his acceptance speech on primary night. Money doesn't vote. People vote. And when you look at how much the Brat campaign spent versus Cantor, again, does maybe if you can't do enough negative advertising if you have so many negatives against yourself, like Cantor apparently had.
Yeah, no kidding. And the other thing that's interesting about Cantor's negative ads is there's kind of an interesting analogy to another really prominent Republican primary race, and that is Senator Ted Cruz's race against then-Lieutenant Governor David Dewhurst in Texas in 2012. In the final, you know, tail end of that race, Dewhurst started running very negative ads against Cruz. He started calling him Red Ted. He suggested Cruz had communist ties. Suggested Cruz cared more about China than the United States, and those ads backfired like crazy. Texan Republican primary voters said, look, we don't know a ton about this Cruz guy, but we know he's not a communist, and we know this is dumb. And those ads both sort of disillusioned people from Dewhurst and raised Cruz's profile, and we know how that worked out. Yeah. Almost the identical thing happened in Virginia 7. Eric Cantor ran kind of goofy, cartoonish-y-looking negative ads against Brat. Said he was a liberal college professor, criticized him for being on Keynes' Board of Economic Advisors. And because he ran those ads, Brat's profile went up. And people in the district realized, oh, wow, this is a real race. Cantor isn't going to walk into reelection. And, you know, we all know how that worked out.
And now we have two professors from the same college, Randolph-Macon College in Ashland, Virginia. Student body is around 1,300. And they're now political opponents for a seat in the House of Representatives.
Isn't that crazy? they're gonna have some fun faculty meetings.
When you look at the voting base, so just to wrap things up here, is Dave Brat, now that he got over the major hurdle, is it just coasting into the seat now, or does a Democrat have a chance in this seat?
You know, Brat's the prohibitive favorite. This district was crafted so it would be easy for Republicans to win. I mean, this is Eric Cantor's district. This district exists in part as a stronghold for Virginia Republicans. So the folks that I've talked to down there say, unless something really crazy happens, which we shouldn't rule out,
no,
even Tuesday night, but unless something really crazy happens, we're going to have a Congressman Dave Brat in January.
And if nothing else, Dave Brat is probably going to hold the world's record for the highest climb in name recognition percentage of any politician probably in the last century.
No kidding.
And want to see more about, read more about Betsy's work, about this and other stories, that's among the journalists that you'll find at WashingtonExaminer.com. Betsy, thanks so much for cluing us into what's been happening down there. Thanks for being here this morning.
You bet.